You've read and heard from all the others. Now the real story on today's biggest topics.
The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600.
Did you see the settlement yesterday that Bayer agreed to pay just over $10 billion with a B in order to settle roughly 125,000 claims that the Roundup weed killer cases cause cancer, that the Roundup weed killer causes cancer, and also to resolve potential future litigation? The settlement includes $1.25 for possible future litigation against the company by people who say they got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma after using Roundup. Bayer CEO Werner Baumann said, first and foremost, the Roundup settlement is the right action at the right time for Bayer to bring a long period of uncertainty to an end. Bayer used to have a very big presence. Do they still have it right here in New Haven, that big building with the B right off the highway? Anyway, Bayer's a German company. You know what I would like to see? I would like to see no more Roundup. This actually fixes the problem. I mean it. But Stanford University Professor Nora Freeman Angstrom told the New York Times, it's rare that we see a consensual settlement with that many zeros on it. It's true. Normally has to go in front of a jury before they're willing to pay that kind of money, $10 billion, which tells me that they know just how much cancer Roundup caused. The company doesn't pay $10 billion unless they know that they've caused an awful lot of damage to human beings. Don't buy Roundup. I don't know why they don't ban it altogether. And if they are creating a new chemical from it or a new formula, they ought to have a new name. That name is tainted. Okay, let us go now to guest for the day. We're going to go to something fun and fanciful. We're going to talk about road trips we can take, even in this time of COVID, and beautiful places to visit. Joining us now is Joe Yogerst, who is a bona fide road warrior. And he's going to be giving us a little bit of tips from the National Geographic Travel Guides on getting our car and getting ourselves ready to hit the road. And before we introduce Joe, I just want to tell you that I saw on Facebook yesterday, really interesting, that a woman who had rented out her house in a jiffy because of the astronomical rent she could get for it from a New Yorker who wanted to escape the city for the summer here in Fairfield County, decided that she was going to do something she's always wanted to do. So she rented an RV, and with her family, they're driving 10,000 miles. That's what they decided they're going to do. That sound right? 10,000 miles sounds enormous. But anyway, they're hitting the road for the summer. And I think that she won't be the only one doing that. The question is, how do we do that? Joe Yogerst, welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today. Hello. Welcome.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
So are you in California?
10,000 miles, that's a lot.
That's a lot,
more than
right?
I'm willing to do in one shot. So.
Yeah, but maybe she's got the whole summer because maybe she has nothing, you know, she's in the RV for the whole summer. Does that
That's
sound
true.
Like too
well,
much, 10,000?
I'm definitely hitting the road this summer myself. I've already taken one exploratory trip that was just 2 days with camping in between, and I'm planning a trip to Utah in August and another one to Colorado or Washington State in the fall. And I'll be doing car camping or renting an RV along the way. So I think this is the summer of the Great American Road Trip, yep.
So, all right, so, you know, it's interesting because the New York Times just published a very interesting piece of what they're calling isolation travel. By isolation, I don't think they necessarily mean just one human being. I think they mean one or two or four at a time, but not going to places where there are a lot of other people. So,
yes.
Joe, mm-hmm. when you were thinking about the summer of 2020 and road trips to recommend for people, tell us some that you recommend that would be for people who only basically want to be with each other.
Well, you could probably get away with doing that just about anywhere where there's something resembling wilderness. And it depends on where you are. If you're in the Northeast, you know, there's the backwoods of Maine. There's the Green Mountains of Vermont and the White Mountains of New Hampshire. There's the Berkshires in Massachusetts. There's the Adirondack Park in upstate New York, which is the last trip that I did for the drive book, and just fell in love with it. Actually, the Berkshires and the Adirondacks are the last two places I visited for this book, the two drives that are in there on those two places. And I went in the fall, so they were relatively uncrowded compared to what they would normally be. But this is not a normal summer. So I don't think that you're going to have 10 million people in the Adirondacks this summer. And a lot of national parks are very much limiting their numbers this year. I know that Zion National Park in Utah and Yosemite in California, you have to make a reservation and pay your entrance fee online before you even go there, or they're not going to let you in the gates. They're only taking about half as many people as they normally do during the summer season. So a lot of the national parks are going to be less crowded than they normally are. But I would also suggest that people look at their national forests if they're nearby, because there's some great campsites, places to boat on lakes and a lot of hiking trails. And then also take a look at what's probably the closest parks near them, the state parks. There's more than 8,000 state parks in the United States, and a lot of them are very popular, but still at the same time, some are pretty out of the way and uncrowded. So that would be my suggestion. Or maybe head for the Great Plains or the upper Great Lakes, the upper peninsula of Michigan, northern Minnesota, Wisconsin.
I've never been to any
like
of those places.
Where the population isn't
gorgeous.
Very big to begin with.
Yeah, I hear they're absolutely gorgeous. You know, I saw a picture of a cliff. I think it was in Michigan. It looked like it was Capri. It looked like it was Italy. I never saw blue water like that in my life. It was unbelievable. It's amazing
what
this country
has. Yeah, Lake Superior the coast of Lake Superior, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan is really incredible. It's something you don't expect to come across in the Midwest. Like I said, an underutilized treasure.
So thinking about what are the practical... So one of the things is you have to make reservations online, I'm hearing. We're chatting with Joe Yogers, 203-333-9422. By the way, did you author all three of those guidebooks that I received? They're incredible, the 500.
I wrote every word in all three of those books, yes.
Can you tell us the titles? Tell the audience the titles, because they're amazing books.
50 States, 5,000 Ideas, which also includes the 14 Canadian provinces and territories. 100 Parks, 5,000 Ideas, which is national, state, and big city parks, national wildlife refuges and national forests. And then the latest one is 100 Drives, 5,000 Ideas, which is 100 drives across the U.S. and Canada that I picked out all on my own.
So we're in Connecticut, and if we were going from Connecticut, but we wanted to stay in New England, what are one or two of the drives that you would recommend?
Well, there's one called the Yankee Passage that passes through Connecticut. It actually starts in New York City. It starts at JFK because that's where I'm saying people are going to fly in and rent a car there, and goes out
maybe.
Across Long
maybe.
Island. And then
maybe, Joe. Maybe. Maybe. We've just been quarantined.
Maybe.
But okay.
Well, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
okay. Maybe fly there. But
right.
Or if you live in New York City and you rent a car like my friends do and take
yes.
off in places. And it runs out to Montauk Point and the state park out there. And then you go to Orient and take the ferry across to Connecticut and go through that part of the Connecticut coast into Rhode Island, to Newport, and then through the whaling towns like New Bedford, Cape Cod, up into Boston. And it basically explores the maritime heritage of that coast of Long Island, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Massachusetts. So that's the Yankee Passage. Another one that's close to you guys is the Lower Hudson Loop. You go up one side of the Hudson Valley in New York and down the other. Very easy to get to from Hartford in Connecticut. A lot of history, but also a lot of nature. And then artwork at Storm King and places like that, the whole Hudson School of Painting. And like I said before, the Adirondacks are close by. The Green Mountains of Vermont are really close to you guys.
I love them so
Another
much.
One, if you've got kids that are really interested in sports, or for that matter, if you're a grown-up interested, I have a whole Sports Hall of Fame drive that takes in tennis and yachting in Newport, basketball and volleyball in Springfield, Mass., baseball and boxing in upstate New York, and then onwards to the Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. So those are some really easy ones to do. Revolutionary Road, which is Boston at the start of the American Revolution, all the way down to Yorktown at the end of the Revolution. And that can go, you can go straight through the middle of Connecticut on that one. So those are some of the Connecticut-friendly drives you can take.
That's really cool, the Revolution one. So you're basically driving and learning history along the way with different pit stops. That's very cool.
Yeah, and it's kind of chronological, too, because, like I said, it starts in Boston where with the Tea Party and Bunker Hill and Concord and Lexington, and it ends up at Yorktown where it all ended 8 years later.
Yeah, wow. Isn't that something? I'm thinking about the Maritime one because we went to Newport in January, which I loved. I love it every season, but I also like it when no one was there. No one was there in January. And we walked the cliffs, you know, that the cliff walk. I think that's what
that
they
walk,
call it.
The cliff walk, yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Beautiful. So I love the drives, but if for people who are feeling a little bit more ambitious, how do you go about, like, finding out where you might want to camp if you've never done it before?
Well, I think that you go online and, first of all, find out what's available. I mean, my books are ideas books, so while they will mention campgrounds at times, it really doesn't go into the details. You have to buy a more detailed guidebook for that, or like I do, just go online. One of my daughters, who's now out on her own and a big traveler, has become a big camper, and she goes online and she often finds campgrounds for me. She does some of it by looking at Instagram and seeing kind of what's cool and popular, or she just goes on the camping reservation sites like the California State Park reservation site or the nationwide U.S. National Park, you know, reservation site. I would just say pick a park that you want to go to, go on their website and see what the campgrounds are like, see if they're open already, see how much they cost, how many are available, when you can go. That's what I would recommend. Go on, pick a park, go online, see what's available. Go on Google Street View and see if you can actually see pictures of the park or what it's like. Sometimes you can actually do a virtual walk through the campgrounds of these parks to see what they're like on Google Street View.
We're talking with Joe Yogurst, who's the author of three wonderful, wonderful different idea books that were all published by National Geographic. Joe, the printing of these books, the photos, they're works of art. I love the books, and I get books every single day, and I said to my sister, holy cow, you know, how did I get so lucky to get these books? They're staying in my house. They're not being given away. That's already a big deal. They're beautiful books.
Thanks very much. I owe it to all those National Geographic photographers who since 1888 have been taking incredible photos, and also the design staff that did an incredible job, the design staff in Washington, D.C. So,
when you were doing research in Connecticut, because in each book you have different ideas for different states, did you physically come to the state, and is that how you decided to choose what you decided to choose as the gems in Connecticut that people should visit?
Both of my kids went to college in Boston, and I have a lot of friends in New York City, not to mention magazines and book publishers who I've worked for over the years. And I had a really good friend who grew up right outside of Hartford, and another who I met living in Singapore, who ended up taking a job in Hartford. And so I've stayed there with friends. I've driven through a lot of times and stayed there. I can't tell you how many times I've actually driven through the state on my way from one place to another or went there to visit friends. I mean, maybe a dozen times.
So what's your favorite part of Connecticut?
Really, going back to 1992, I think.
So what's your favorite part of Connecticut, Joe Yogurst? What do you like best about Connecticut?
You know, Hartford's a pretty cool city.
You like Hartford?
And, well, yeah, I remember staying with a friend there and going down just on my own to go to the state capitol and also go to the state library because I wanted to do some research there. And it was research on nothing to do with Connecticut. I was writing another book at that time, and I thought, I'll go see what's there. And so I just found myself wandering around downtown Hartford and just having a great day in the sunshine during the summer. And that was really cool to do. The coast, you know, Mystic Seaport, it's hard not to love Mystic Seaport, you know, even when it's on a crowded day. And it's just a very unique part of American history. And I remember first coming across it as a kid because National Geographic did a whole article on Mystic Seaport back in the 1960s. I don't know if you remember that, but... And I said, okay, I've got to go there. And I finally did as a grown-up. I went to Mystic Seaport. So that's, you know, that's kind of what I remember, is doing things like that over a long period of time. So those would be my favorite places. And the Connecticut River Valley is just gorgeous, don't you think?
Yeah, but I don't get to it enough. Like, I don't know what I would visit there, right? So am I going to a farm? What am I going to if I want to, let's say, make a day trip and go to the Connecticut River Valley? Am I going to a vineyard? What am I doing?
Wow, now you're putting me on the spot. I have to think back 3 books.
So. Yeah, okay. How many books have you written, Joe?
I just finished my 38th book for National Geographic, and I just started the 39th.
Oh, and wow.
I'm somewhere up around 60 or 70 total books, I think.
Wow. Well, thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate it, Joe Yogurst. These are marvelous books, 50 States, 5,000 Ideas, 100 Drives, 5,000 Ideas, just a million. When you see the big numbers, these beautiful National Geographic guidebooks, they're well worth having. And I'll tell you the truth, I can just look at them and have a reverie right now. As I'm sitting inside my COVID-19 paradise, I can look at these pretty pictures and dream of going to these places. And it's nice to do that. Travel books are nice for that. I like it.
Well, everyone will get out there. This isn't going to last forever. Everyone will get out there sometime. In the meantime, think about taking a road trip with your significant other or your family or your best friend that you've been locked down with for the last 3 months. And get out there and hit the road.
Hit the road. Thank you, Joe. Joe Yogurst from National Geographic. We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show coming up.